hearing, 2015 triennial review of the water quality control plan for the Lahontan region. Ms. Kumyanjin.
I'd like to ask Richard Booth to join us. This is an item that was before the board previously in the scoping session to get information and input and public comment. And so Richard is here with you today to walk through the item and share with you the comments and input from both the board and the public.
Thank you, Patty. Thank you. Too staticky here. Good afternoon, members of the board and audience. My name is Rich Booth. I am the unit supervisor of the PMDL Basin Planning Unit, and we're here today to consider adoption of a list of projects for basin planning purposes. The scoping meeting, as Patty mentioned, was held at our board meeting last September, and this is the adoption hearing. So what I'd like to do for the next half hour or so is go through what the triennial review is. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on that subject for the board members that have not been here since the last triennial review. I want to talk about how each of these proposed projects have come onto this list, particularly since September. And then the goal, of course, is to hopefully adopt a prioritized list of these topics or projects. You, of course, have the option of adopting it as is, modifying it, or rejecting it outright, which I hope you don't do that last part. Triennial review. The Clean Water Act requires that our basin plan undergo a review of what's in the basin plan, particularly our standards, every 3 years. The triennial review process in California involves water board action to prioritize a list of planning issues or projects that for the staff to address over the following 3 years. This is not a regulatory action, unless we were before you today with a specific basin plan amendment, which we are not. This is simply to adopt a list of projects that we have prioritized, that you have agreed to, that are prioritized. Now let me digress for just a moment to talk a little bit about the basin plan itself. As I'm sure you're aware, but as a reminder, the basin plan contains water quality objectives. Water quality objectives, be they numerical concentrations or narrative descriptions, are to support beneficial uses. The beneficial uses, such as drinking and for fishing, be it cold habitat or warm habitat, and there's some like 20 different beneficial uses, are supported by these water quality objectives that we have in our basin plan. And I'm going to touch on some of these projects later that have to do with the fact that some of these water quality objectives support beneficial uses, and some are perhaps too strict to support beneficial uses, consideration of changing water quality objectives. So the basin planning process involves both setting new beneficial uses for particular reaches of a stream, which we may talk about today, or it may involve de-designating or take away a beneficial use. None of those de-designations are proposed for this list, but we've done that in the past, the most recent being the China Lake groundwater. So these projects, I've used the term both topics and projects. By basin planning topic, I'm really referring to a generalized issue, whereas when we talk about a project, that's something more specific. That's something that we have description here in this agenda package, something that is a bit more specific than just a general notion. So like I say, these projects may result in a basin plan amendment. That's why they're part of the basin planning process. In September, we had 22 projects before you as a scoping meeting. We had a comment period that was extended, but it officially ended October 2nd. And during that comment period, we received 7 comment letters, some letters addressing multiple issues. And as a consequence of what we heard from you board members in the September meeting, as well as these comment letters, we've consolidated some of these projects so that we wound up with 20 projects here before you now and proposed for adoption. For example, there were several projects in the September meeting that have been combined into one project, all dealing with the Mojave River and Mojave groundwater. We thought that we could do some time and resource efficiency saving by combining these projects and have staff work on related issues dealing with the Mojave. And we also sort of cut back on some of the scope. Some of our projects dealt with region-wide issues, and we, meaning staff, are proposing to maybe only deal with some of these issues in the Mojave Basin first before we take it region-wide. This will involve a water quality objective issue for groundwater sub-basins in the Mojave, as well as some site-specific objectives, particularly for TDS, for certain reaches of the Mojave River, which I'll describe in more detail later. And then we added a new project, embedded the request by Truckee River Watershed Council, as well as Dave Herks with SNARL, Sierra Nevada Aquatic Research Lab, to have a standard for the middle Truckee River be bedded sediment, because that is the habitat for that middle Truckee River. The most sensitive beneficial use would be best evaluated with bedded sediment, as opposed to the current standard we have now dealing with suspended sediment concentration. We've added that to the list of priority of projects to round out our 20 total. You're welcome to interrupt me at any time during this process, particularly as I go through the projects. If I go too fast or you want to stop and have a question about any of these, let me know, but I will go through each project here in a little bit of detail. Okay, okay. So, for this item you have in front of you, the green sheet that summarizes pretty much what I've been saying. There is a resolution in the first enclosure. It's the two-page resolution that we're requesting that you adopt. Attached to the resolution on Bates page 2-7 is the list. We have divided the list into above the line and below the line because, as I'll describe in more detail later, we have allotted for the basin planning staff 2 PYs per year available to us to work on these projects. So over a total of 3 years, that's 6 PYs available to us. And so we have estimated how many PYs over 3 years each project will take. And once we hit the magic number 6, we drew the line, put it in yellow highlight to emphasize these are the projects we are proposing to be priority that basin planning staff work on. The projects below the line, numbers 10 through 20, are on the list, projects to work on, but we'll need additional funding sources for us to work on them. Or perhaps we'll have interested parties provide funding and reports, evaluations, and such that can help us do these projects. Or the projects above the line may be delayed. They may be postponed for various reasons, and that will free up resources to work on the projects below the line. So even though there are projects below the line, please consider the priority of those projects listed in order of priority for the adoption of this list. We can make changes on this list today if necessary, but I wanted to emphasize that we have above the line and below the line based on resources, but that is subject to change over the next 3 years. Okay, behind that we have a staff report. Again, more detail of the process and some background information. Attached to the staff report is a table that is starts on Bates 2-19. It's table 2, and it is the status of the existing triennial review projects as of last August. This is the same table you saw in September, so it's the same thing. There's nothing new here, but we just want to let you know how we're doing with the list of projects that were adopted 3 years ago. The following table is the one that I'll go through in a bit detail. And that's Table 3 on Bates, starts on Bates 2-27. And it lists each of our 20 proposed projects with a little bit of description of each to help us understand what we think is important or not. Then also in the enclosure in your package is Table 4 on Bates 2-43. Same list of projects, yellow highlight above the line, white below the line. But on that table, we've added criterion that were used and help us to prioritize.
Cool.
And this is a result of specific comments that many of you made in September, so that it could help you understand what are the types of things we look at, what are the types of information we use to help us prioritize these projects. So, for example, if a project has a climate change issue, if climate change effects will influence this project, or we want to have a project to deal with the effects of climate change, we've listed in the last column of this table on 2-43 whether that project is involved with climate change or not. Similarly for many of the other criteria that you can see on that table. Enclosure 3 contains the comment letters that we received. And I want to briefly talk about them for a moment. On page 2-47 is an index of the letters, and behind the index are the letters themselves with a staff response. The responses, I want to point out here, there were some comments made that they agreed or disagreed or certainly wanted to support or not support certain of these projects. Our responses were not to say whether the commenter was right or wrong or get into the issues of the particular project. The whole point of these comments and our responses were to determine if they should even be a project under consideration or not. So I think you'll see from these comment letters, these are all projects that are on the list, so we're going to consider them. The responses we made in acknowledging their comments, and hopefully we addressed some of them in our description of the projects themselves, as well as responding to the commenter, were helpful for us to help prioritize our projects. Real briefly on Bates 2-47, we received two letters from William Thomas, one on behalf of Davewood Ranches, another on behalf of Centennial Ranches, and he mentioned several of the subjects of the projects, including bacterial water quality objective revision, we'll get into later, riparian protection, biological indicators, hot creek objectives. In his second letter, he mentioned Lake Tahoe Standard. I want to mention on that particular project, he called it Lake Tahoe Standard, but what he was saying was that if the Lake Tahoe Nearshore Project will divide Lake Tahoe into a nearshore area, defined a certain way, versus a mid-lake area, and if it's proposed or we're considering separate water quality standards or water quality objectives for those two parts of the lake, then why not include bacteria? Have a water quality objective for bacteria of the nearshore area and have a separate bacteria standard out mid-lake. So it's not so much that he was commenting on the nearshore project as he was offering up the idea of divvying up the lake into two areas to have separate water quality objectives, given the fact that the nearshore has already introduced that concept. Very good comment. And if you adopt this list, it includes the bacteria water quality objectives project as a priority. I can tell you that that will be taken into consideration. As I mentioned, Dave Herbst is recommending a particular standard for the Middle Truckee River that would be embedded sediment. We also had a letter from Truckee River Watershed Council offering the same comment. We had heard from Los Angeles County Sanitation Districts the request to remove groundwater and groundwater recharge and agricultural beneficial uses from an area beneath Paiute Ponds. Technical Advisory Committee for Mojave Water Agency sent a letter just asking that we continue our staff collaborating with them and continue the outreach. And then finally, a comment letter from Logan Oles with Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority mentioning several projects. Comments on several projects, and I'd like to tell you that he is in the audience tonight if you have any questions specific for him. He offered to come up, but I said, well, let's see if there's any questions. These slides are in your enclosure 4 in your package. And then I want to mention one more addition. Dr. Amy Horn had presented to me a few days ago some nice charts that indicate an idea of population growth in our various counties of our region. And I have those as slides here, and I also have, I don't know if Amy or Sue has handouts that if you would like, that have those plots. Let me go to those right now. I think they're at the end of this, Sue?
Yeah, they're at the very end.
Okay. One of the criteria we use for prioritizing these is the projected population growth in our region by county. The handout will be a little more clear, but this part, this slide that you see in front of you here indicates the population percent change. And the second slide here is the population growth from 2000 to 2010 as the actual growth, and then there's an extrapolation from 2010 to 2040 of projected growth. And I want to point out on both slides that San Bernardino County has the highest percent change and the highest projected population growth. For example, we took this information into account to propose our project that we're calling the Mojave River, Mojave Groundwater Basin Project. I believe it's number 6 on our list. It's in San Bernardino County. We expect population growth in both the surface and groundwater quality for that area, we believe, is priority because of this increased population growth. And this is one of the factors we use, like I say, in prioritizing.
Rich, can I elaborate a little bit on the percent change one?
Yes, please.
Is that right? Well, actually, on both of them. So just to explain this data a little more, this is standard population data from the numbers from 2000 to 2010 are actual measurements, and then after that it's projected, and this is a standard source from the California Department of Finance. So I included Nevada County, El Dorado County, and Placer County, even though in all three of those counties, most of the population growth is, or population and growth is likely outside of the Lahontan region. So not all of the growth in El Dorado and Placer County is going to happen in the Tahoe Basin, and not all the growth in Nevada County is going to happen in Truckee. I did not include Los Angeles County and Kern County because I felt the population story there was going to be swamped by the part of the population of those counties that lies outside the Lahontan region. But I think what the population trends we can see for San Bernardino County are probably similar to what we can expect in the portions of LA County and Kern County that are in our region.
Thank you. I'd like to go through now briefly, talk about each of the 20 projects. Again, I repeat, if you have a question or you want to interrupt with a comment, please feel free to do so. I'm going to start on the project descriptions at Bates 2-27. Excuse me. These first three projects, they are related to the Basin Planning Program itself. It includes managing the program. It includes performing a triennial review for 2018, and miscellaneous work that occurs. And you can see the estimate of resource needs we have for each of those projects, and those PYs are for over a total of 3-year period. And that last project, I have in parentheses the word fixes. We have typos. We have incorrect information in our basin plan. It gets in there every once in a while, and we don't want to go through a long process to fix a few things. For example, I think the square mile acreage for the southern region is really for the whole region, and so we've got those kinds of mistakes in there. We did a big sweep of clarifying a lot of things when Chuck Curtis was here and updated the basin plan with clarifications, but there's still more to come. These are the types of things that we would anticipate correcting in the basin plan, perhaps along with another basin plan amendment on one of the projects, for example. Not as the same project, but at the same time we're doing a major basin plan amendment, we might consider quote, doing some of these fixes because some of those procedures are similar, and it would save us some time to do that. The next two projects, numbers 4 and 5 above the line, are ones that you have all seen before. You should be familiar with them. They are to revise the bacterial water quality objectives in our region. That project is underway. It was part of the training review last time, still underway. We propose to continue it because there's still more work to be done. In particular, we're still coordinating with state board staff on their revision of bacterial water quality objectives, and we're continuing with our evaluation and sampling of bacteria in some of our water bodies to determine if we think, in fact, our water quality objectives for some of our water bodies for bacteria should have a different standard than what State Board is recommending for the entire state. There is an EO report I wrote on the update for that. I think it was in this package. Yes, I'm getting that out from Patty. For more detailed information on the update of what we're doing on that project. Lake Tahoe Nearshore, this project is legislative. There's legislative direction to do this project, so that's why it's on the list, besides the fact it's a good project. We're looking at the nearshore for the algae growth on the rocks that was floating in the water. We're looking at what type of input to the lake that could cause type of impairments to the water quality that are along the nearshore. This is an ongoing project. We have researchers under contract helping us out with establishing this type of evaluation, and it's underway. Dan Sussman, I believe, gave another EO report, the update on that one here recently. Okay, I'm now going to come to our project number 6 that has, from the September list, several projects, somewhat modified, plus a new one. And this one, with more detail, begins on Bates 2-31. There has been a suggestion to add a beneficial use for certain reaches of the Mojave River, the biological beneficial use, to protect the aquatic habitat. This is from upstream of the Mojave Forks Dam from Bear Valley Road to Hellendale at Waterman Fault and in Apton Canyon, for those of you familiar with the specific. This would protect, or increase protection, I should say, for our important source of water and wildlife habitat in the desert area. One of the drawbacks, or one of the things you may hear if we do this project, is that it may limit some recreation use for the reaches that I just mentioned. So if we accept this as a project, it will be, the pros and cons will obviously be considered. All these projects as possible basin plan amendments, which a addition of a beneficial use would be a basin plan amendment, certainly undergoes a lot of public outreach and comment. You would hear from the public extensively should we adopt a basin plan amendment to add a beneficial use. Site-specific objectives for specific reaches of the Mojave River. In particular, TDS nutrients are concerned for wastewater effluent. We may want to have site-specific objectives for specific reaches of the Mojave River. This project would consider such and recommend changes to site-specific objectives. And when I say site-specific objectives, that's really the same as water quality objectives for the purposes of the basin plan. There's differences in those two terminology in sort of a wonkish way, but as far as our basin plan is concerned, we're really talking about water quality objectives for specific reaches of the Mojave River. There's been a request from VVWRA to reevaluate, possibly remove the beneficial use known as cold. This has to do with cold fish habitat for a particular reach of the Mojave River, particularly as climate change has influenced the Mojave River. Not as much water, some of the reaches dry up. A cold fish beneficial use may not be appropriate. We would like to consider that as possibly de-designating specific reach of Mojave, or possibly make it seasonal. Maybe part of the year it would be a beneficial use to protect, whereas another part of the year it would not be appropriate. Or any other idea. The point being here, if we adopt this list, then we would consider reevaluating the code. We're not guaranteeing that we would remove it. We're just committing to evaluating that. And finally, there's site-specific objectives for specific groundwater basins. Now, at one point, we were considering as part of the triennial review a project to evaluate water quality objectives, re-evaluate water quality objectives for all of our groundwater basins, or at least the priority basins in our region. As salt and nutrient management plans came in, as we learned more about the water quality of our basins, we wanted to consider if the existing objectives were appropriate. And we've decided that would be too much. It would take too many resources because of other projects and priorities that we have. So we'd like to limit such an, we still want to do such an evaluation. We want to limit it to the Mojave groundwater basin because that is where we see development. That is where we see population growth. That is where we see a lot of data, a lot of information. And that is where we have sub-basins that are delineated within the overall Mojave groundwater basin that would be appropriate to evaluate whether a site-specific objectives for a particular sub-basin would be the way to go. If, in fact, we have one sub-basin that has a similar capacity that we might want to use by having waste discharge versus another sub-basin where we've determined that there's simply no similar capacity, the water quality objectives would be appropriate for that basin without any further influence, any further raising of the concentrations, particularly of TDS or of nitrate. Are there any questions on that one? I kind of ran through that pretty quickly. Very good. Right, and the idea being that if we did perform this evaluations of the sub-basins, the information and the procedures we used would be helpful for doing other groundwater basins in our region, perhaps during the next triennial review in 2018. Okay, I've got three more on our above-the-line projects. Squaw Valley groundwater withdrawal and in-stream flow. This is described on page 2-34. Evaluate the effects of potential increased groundwater withdrawal in Squaw Valley on water quality of the creek and its tributaries. In particular, examine the interplay of water supply and water quality influencing biological conditions. These would be the most sensitive to such an interplay. This may involve consideration of flow requirements for Squaw Creek, possibly in the form of flow objectives with regulatory effect to protect certain beneficial uses. This would be kind of a new thing for us. Other regions have addressed this type of flow objectives, but this is something that we would consider for Squaw Creek specifically. And this, of course, is a project that's affected by climate change, population change, and we already have studies performed in Squaw Valley. So I want to emphasize that although basin planning staff has not worked on this project, there are evaluations of the surface water groundwater interaction already performed. I believe it was the water district that had those contracted out. So there's information out there that we can pick this project up and hopefully figure out what's going on in the interplay between surface water and groundwater. Project number 8, evaluate appropriate statistical methods to evaluate data. So we have, when we evaluate data, when we set water quality objectives, we of course have to take the data that's been gathered, typically water quality samples of the stream, and statistically evaluate that data. For about 5 or 6 of our water bodies, we use an evaluation method known as means of monthly means. While the rest of the water bodies, we just take the annual average, or in some cases, the 90th percentile. And if a TDS sample, for example, or a chloride sample exceeds that annual average or the 90th percentile, that's a violation, that's an exceedance of the water quality objective. We need to go figure that out. For the means of monthly means, as the name implies, you take a bunch of samples in 1 month, average them, take a bunch of samples the following month, average those, and you're done for the year, you average each of those single monthly means. Well, the bad news about the means of monthly means is two bad news. One is you need a lot of data, you need a lot of samples.
for this to be effective. And we typically don't have that. We typically have maybe a dozen samples per year for many of our water bodies. So the means of monthly means isn't an appropriate statistical value. Instead, annual average, or perhaps 90th percentile, would be appropriate. Another bad news about means, monthly means, is if you have a lot of data, you have the opposite problem, I should call it a problem, where, for example, the Truckee River, many, many years of data, going back in the early days, once you take samples of your more recent time period of the last few years, then if you are noticing water quality improvements that your data are telling you, you don't really get to see that improvement if you're evaluating data that goes back many, many years, because the recent improvements in water quality are hidden or overwhelmed by the older data that you're having to average. So there's a desire to not have to do that type of evaluation because it doesn't give a true representation of the water quality data. Since we have water bodies with means of monthly means, we would require a basin plan amendment to change that. Those water bodies, for example, are Eagle Lake, Little Truckee River, East and West Forks of the Carson River, and Pine Creek.
Where's Pine Creek?
Pine Creek?
Yeah.
Bishop.
Okay.
And then number 9, riparian protection policy. This would be a revision to the basin plan to include specific implementation measures to protect all the beneficial uses for surface water and groundwater as well, for recharge, from the effects of development and from hydromodification. Specific emphasis is needed on protecting desert surface waters that include measures to control or prevent excessive erosion of soft soils and subsequent downstream sediment deposition that would adversely affect the aquatic and the wildlife habitats. The main consideration for this project is going to be considering the effects that climate change will likely bring that will result in more frequent and in more severe flashy events. So I think the term here used as part of the project description in your staff report is that it protects the watershed resiliency, the ability for the watershed to remain doing its water quality job in the riparian area, even given more floods, more frequent floods. So the implementation measures will be required in the basin plan to be done in these watersheds. Now, we certainly have such protections in place and continue to work on protecting watersheds this way. This is proposed as a basin plan amendment to add more regulatory authority for such of these proposed plans. I'm going to start in on the below-the-line projects, but again remind you that just because it's below-the-line doesn't mean we will not work on them. I suspect many of them will be worked on, particularly those that we have data for. It's just a matter of the resources that we have available. I also want to remind you that other staff in other units will help in figuring out and evaluating the data and even the process of perhaps changing the basin plan if we want to go to these projects. In the natural course of their work, in the regulatory world, when they're writing a permit, they're dealing with the water quality objectives all the time. And they have data, I'm talking about staff now, both Victorville and South Lake Tahoe, that can help the basin planning staff evaluate these projects and provide the information needed for a basin plan amendment, if that's considered appropriate. We also have interested parties who will provide contractors, resources, their own staff help to help us do these evaluations. Hot Creek water quality objectives, description on 2-36, increased constituent levels that are coming from the natural groundwater flows that enter the creek exceed some water quality objectives, so the existing water quality objectives may not be appropriate. It's a natural inflow that exceeds water quality objectives. Fortunately for that project, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has collected quite a bit of water quality data to help in this effort. So even though it's below the line, it's number 10. It's certainly we consider it a high priority project because it has data and it has a desire to make our water quality objective appropriate for that type of watershed with the groundwater influence. Biological indicators, number 11. State Board's working on this. This is something where our water quality would be judged by biological indicators. Benthic macro invertebrates, for example, the number of them, the diversity of them. So the idea of having water quality objectives based on the biota of a stream is the main crux of this project. State Board's been working on this for quite a number of years. It's a difficult process. It's something we are very interested in. The folks in the regulatory unit have been working on this a bit. We would like to include it as a project on our list as a high priority, but nonetheless below the line. Number 12, region-wide approach to TDS, total dissolved solids, water quality objectives for surface waters. This is an outgrowth of our integrated report when our TMDL folks looked at all the water quality data during a process known as integrated report for all of our water bodies, something like 3,500 bits of data, and came up with the water bodies that were considered impaired based on water quality exceedances. Then we figure out what we're going to do about it. We're in the process of doing just that. They came before you in June to explain that process. Well, one of the things they found that a lot of our TDS values are very low. The water quality objective TDS and a lot of our water bodies are low in the sense that all the beneficial uses are protected. You can drink the water, the aquatic habitats are just fine, and yet the TDS values on the range of 10 or 20 milligram per liter doesn't need to be that low to be protective of the beneficial uses. I mean, you know, fresh drinking water is 500 milligram per liter, so something on the order of 10, 20, 30 milligram per liter for our streams is just so low that we have to declare that water body impaired, even though all the beneficial uses are protected. And once we have a water body declared impaired on our TMDL, known as the 303D list, then we have to address it. We have to spend staff time. And believe me, we would rather spend staff time doing some basin planning projects or other TMDL projects than trying to convince others that our water bodies are not really impaired. So the idea of changing water quality objectives, particularly for TDS, is a proposed project. This is for all of our water bodies that have it too low, but we're going to at least start with the Mojave stretches of considering changing the TDS values, and maybe not for the entire region. So we kind of split this project into two, Mojave for sure, and maybe the rest of the region, depending on how well it goes with Mojave. Okay. Number 13, Susan River site-specific objectives. There is effluent there in a particular stretch of the Susan River that we want to consider, frankly, changing the water quality, perhaps lowering it to ensure continued protection of beneficial uses for the effluent to be able to be used, to actually be allowed to go into the Susan River. This project is in a preliminary evaluation stage. We'll need to involve the Susanville Community Services District, certainly the downstream users, particularly agricultural users, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife to evaluate the alternatives for the water quality of that. It may involve increased treatment of the effluent, maybe more land disposal capacity, winter storage of the wastewater. So these are some of the factors that we're going to evaluating for that project. This is a newly proposed project, number 14, Truckee River Embedded Sediment Standard. The beneficial use, particularly for fish, in the middle Truckee River in particular, would best be evaluated using the amount of embedded sediment on the bottom, the fine sediment that settles to the bottom of the stream, according to the commenters. Much better standard to be used. Right now, the Truckee River has a TMDL of suspended sediment suspended in the water column, and it's measured at one point downstream. There are other factors in the TMDL that dischargers and interested parties in the watershed are doing, such as keeping the sediment out of the river. But the Truckee River Watershed Council and Dave Herbst has narrowed in on very specific parts of the Truckee River where the embedded sediment standard, if adopted, would best evaluate the river and take steps to keep that particular type of sediment out of the water
and restore or enhance the fish habitat. So it's on the list. We'd like to consider it. We have also in parallel a reassessment of the TMDL target as a TMDL project. And reassessing the TMDL target involves, in fact, looking, evaluating whether embedded sediment would be a more appropriate target for the TMDL than the existing suspended sediment. So what I'm proposing is to consider this project as a project, but continue working on revising the TMDL target for the Middle Truckee with an embedded sediment standard, possibly, instead of changing the basin plan to make an embedded sediment water quality objective. Again, adopting the list, we would work on this particular project and consider it as a standard, but I'm just telling you this about the TMDL so you know that we have another sort of parallel effort in mind for the Truckee River, because we agree that that suspended sediment concentration water quality objective or target isn't the best. Number 15, remove two beneficial uses from private ponds. These are for agriculture use and for groundwater recharge. Water effluent from Los Angeles sanitation, Los Angeles County sanitation districts are going to Pike Ponds, and they're saying, you know, they have to treat the water to meet all the beneficial uses that apply. These two beneficial uses, they believe, do not really apply to the Pike Ponds, and they're having to come up for a permit renewal in the year 2020, so they're going to have to treat water to a standard of a beneficial use that's not being used. This project would have staff evaluate that very contention and determine if, in fact, that if those two beneficial uses aren't really necessary, they could possibly be removed, saving not having to require the wastewater treatment, construction, implementation of advanced treatment facilities. Now, this is a case where LACSD is committed to giving data, already has, and would continue giving us data to help us evaluate that very question. It would not be something that the Water Board staff would have to go out and collect data. We could rely on LACSD to help us in collecting data. Clarify policy on package plants, number 16, bait stamp 2-40. There's a bit of confusion in the basin plan on who has the authority to regulate these package plants. They're regulated under waste discharge requirements. They're small aerated package plants. They're considered alternative systems, and they're authorized under their local authority, and they don't require authorization from the Water Board. Well, there's a desire to classify the applicability of that. We could do a basin plan amendment that specifies the authority. Instead of a basin plan amendment, we could possibly write a clarification memo, or we could possibly have Water Board approvals listed to the local area management plans. These are the county folks that regulate septic systems. But this proposal is on the list because it could result in a basin plan amendment if we decided that that be the appropriate way to clarify this regulatory authority concerning these package plans. Almost forgot fish springs. Bear with me a bit longer here. Number 17, fish springs. This is similar to Hot Creek. We've got groundwater coming into the creek that is naturally high in some constituents. It makes it difficult for the water leaving the fish hatchery to meet the water quality objectives. This one has been lowered on the list, still on the list, as a possible changing of the objectives. But it's lowered in priority because it is no longer needed. Actually, having site-specific objectives are no longer needed to assess the Department of Fish and Wildlife in achieving permit compliance because the Water Board and the U.S. EPA has approved the concept known as intake credits, meaning that the water that comes into the fish hatchery is naturally high in many of the constituents, and therefore the fish hatchery itself is not obligated to have the water leave their fish hatchery with water quality better than what came in, than what is coming in. So it's still a listed project, but it has lowered in priority because it's not as urgent. Okay, final three. There's a
model known as biotic ligand model for copper that the US EPA has for a national criteria used to help evaluate what copper should be for a water quality standard. Uses this model to come up with a copper concentration. This is something to consider. VVWRA has made a comment on this in its consideration for incorporating the model in determining copper water quality standards. Similarly, revising PCPs, pentachlorophenol, for water quality objectives. The US EPA proposes this. Apparently, this revising the PCP is a consideration for early stages of salmonids. This was on the previous triennial review. It didn't rise to the priority of working on it last triennial review, but we would like to leave it on the list as a possible project to work on. And finally, the last one, Eagle Lake. It's called a building moratorium. This has to do with septic systems. The request would be to lessen the restrictions on building density for septic systems. I think right now there's a 20-acre minimum for new development. Other places have you can build two houses on 20 acres. There's reasons why that particular project would probably not be viable given the geology of the Eagle Lake area. But again, we want to keep it on the list as a possible project that is low in priority. So I've gone through the projects. I'm going to finish up a little bit talking about resources, but before I do, are there any questions on these projects?
Any questions so far from the board? Mr. Geis?
Two questions, Rich. First of all, Project 14, Truckee River Embedded Sediment Standard. Does this project propose to use embedded sediment as a TMDL?
Good question. If the basin plan were to be amended to set a standard for embedded sediment, I'm kind of thinking out loud here, the TMDL is also in the basin plan. So if we change the basin plan standard for that, it seems to me, you know, I look around for my colleagues, that we would also need to change, it would be appropriate, I should say, to change the target of the TMDL, which is in the basin plan as well. So in other words, if we were to change a target for the TMDL, we would have to change the basin plan. It's a basin plan amendment because TMDLs are in the basin plan. So there may be a double benefit to do both because they would both be basin plan amendments. I don't know that you would have to change the TMDL target because we have targets that are separate from water quality objectives in our basin plan. So to answer your question would be no, we wouldn't have to do that, but I would advocate it as a thing to do because it's related to the same issue.
Well, how would we measure the total maximum daily load of embedded sediment?
I'm looking into the crowd for the person who wrote the TMDL for the Truckee River is in the audience today, although she is not prepared to speak. Total daily loads, particularly for sediment, is troublesome. And it is the bane of all TMDL writers. We prefer concentrations. We prefer things that come from the watershed into the water body in a way that we can measure the loading much more accurately, more effectively. Sediment is notoriously difficult to get right because it is so dependent upon the flooding events, the storm events, and all of the tough-to-measure ways of transporting sediment into the river. So the best science is used, and they're known to be estimates. We use a particular protocol that the US EPA has written guidance for to give us these numbers, to give us the loading. We calculate it in tons per year, which is the ultimate measure of the load, but they have their uncertainty.
Maybe I make things worse. I don't know. I'll try. So if Dave Herbst is a very respected aquatic ecologist, then if he proposed this, I think it's safe to assume there's a way to measure it. I think we came closer to something like this with our Squaw Creek TMDL. where there were two standards that involved measuring the actual bed of Squaw Creek. Ann's nodding. Maybe she can. Sure. So I don't know if the embedded sediment would be exactly the same, but it would be similar to, I think, what we already did with the Squaw Creek TMDL. Ann's coming up behind
you. I would love for Ann to address this, but let me make sure that I understand the question. I might have misunderstood. Dave Herbst has, and the Truckee River Watershed Council have performed a lot of studies measuring embedded
yeah.
sediment.
Yeah.
And if you look at your comment letters, you'll see some of the slides that they presented that.
Yeah.
So that information is available. Sediment that's suspended in the water column is much more matter, and I'll turn it over to Ann Hogan right now so she can hopefully give you a little more information.
Good evening. I'm Ann Holden, engineering geologist in the South Lake Tahoe office. And Dr. Horn, you're correct. There were two measures of bedded sediment in the Squaw Creek TMDL. One was percent fines and sand that were measured on the stream bed as grab samples. And then the other one was called D50 particle size, which also was a measurement of the size of the particles on the stream bed. And Dr. Herbst came up with those measurements as a way to judge the quality of aquatic habitat in Squaw Creek. So those are measures of bedded sediment, not embedded, but just sediment on the bed of Squaw Creek that we use for TMDL targets. So I just want to be clear that TMDL targets are different than water quality objectives. So if we were to go forward with a Truckee River embedded sediment standard, how I'm understanding this project is that there would be an embedded sediment standard put into the basin plan that could then be used to judge the aquatic habitat of the Truckee River using that standard. If it didn't meet that standard, we would then list the Truckee River for embedded sediment. So it's a little bit backwards from
right.
the other way. So it could result in the Truckee River being listed and needing another TMDL.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ann. I'm glad you're here. just and also the effects of embedded sediment on the biota. Truckee River Watershed Council have done some studies, and they mentioned on Bates 2-70, 2-71, some of the results of those studies. And I'm sure they can provide you with those studies if you would request.
Okay. Rich, let's see if there's any more questions. Mr. Pumphrey? Mr. Sandell?
No.
Mr. Jardine?
No.
Dr. Hunt?
Thank you. I think I have two quick questions. Well, one question is, I see a lot of the same projects come around every 3 years, and they tend to stay below the line. And so I'm just wondering, do we ever drop anything off this list? I'm wondering if the Eagle Lake one is even appropriate now. I don't know. And so I'm just wondering if these projects ever go away, become irrelevant.
We did. We dropped. How did we drop? I'm going to turn... Laurie can help remind me of some of the projects that we dropped. Do you remember? I can't remember them offhand.
I think it is a good question, Dr. Owens. My name is Laurie Kemper, Assistant Executive Officer for the record. I think there have been things that have been dropped. Primarily, it's the small, minor things. I mean, the one that we did drop this year was a request by staff to add a dairy policy to the basin plan. It's similar to the one that's still on the list about the package treatment plant sort of policy, because these are things we solicit ideas, you know, from the public and from staff, and we kind of just compile these things. And some of the things like the package plant policy or the dairy policy, staff requested those to be, they were looking for clarifications, because a lot of the narrative that's in our basin plan is from 1975, and it's outdated. And as Rich mentioned, the last big basin plan amendment that Chuck Curtis and Bob Larson worked on, we did clean up a lot of that, but we didn't touch other things that are still maybe ambiguous or unclear. And so those things have stayed under the line, or we dropped like the dairy policy because we didn't need to put something in our basin plan. We have all the existing authorities and tools, regulatory tools, permits, that we don't need to actually amend the basin plan to spell that out. We can just go forward and protect groundwater, or, you know, require cleanup and things like that. So we do evaluate those kinds of projects to figure out whether or not they're really needed or not. And the other thing is in the miscellaneous, in the the other thing we've done with some of these small requests is they've gotten compiled into the one that says cleanup. And that's because we do have like an ongoing, both Dr. Unsker and Rich Booth have maintained a list of these minor fixes where someone reads something that's just wrong, you know, we got to change that, or this is outdated or old policy. So those things have dropped over, you know, after the last big update, because we did clean things up.
Okay.
Now, as it relates to Eagle Lake, just to let people know, that was a specific request in the previous triennial review, and the person did not request it. We didn't hear from that person again this year. But I want to, and so this is a good, I'm going to bring it up because it's a good one to get feedback from the board. So one individual requested this change in the basin plan, and it's still on our list. The change is relevant to about, my understanding is, no more than five people. And the reason that it only applies to five people is that when the Water Board adopted the Eagle Lake Basin amendments that were done in 1984, that primarily dealt with the prohibitions against septic systems in the Spalding Tract and Stones to get those communities sewered, at the same time the board adopted those prohibitions, they adopted the one house per 20-acre minimum density for new development outside those subdivisions. Because those subdivisions have very, well, Spalding Tract had like less than 10,000 square foot lots, and then Stones had maybe half acre. So because Eagle Lake's a closed basin, the board adopted for new development one house per 20 acres, and that seemed okay because there were still some large tracts of private land that hadn't been subdivided yet. And the board just said, you know, we just don't think it's appropriate. But essentially, it was a prohibition on new subdivisions is what it was. But what happened, and I don't know that the staff at the time knew this, that there were something like six parcels of land in the Eagle Lake Basin that are like 6.5-acre parcels, 7-acre parcels. And the person who asked to have the basin plan changed owns one of those parcels. He would like to build a house on 6 acres. It probably would not harm water quality for him to do that. But because of our basin plan, we have told him, no, you can't put in a standard septic system. What we have told him is he could put in an alternative engineered system that reduced the nitrogen loading to something equivalent of 6.75 acres over 20 acres. I mean, you know, like kind of essentially like if he could show that it was only producing a third of the normal wastewater, we would permit it. He didn't want to hire an engineer, and he wanted to be able to develop in a more standard way and not have to spend a lot of money. And so he requested the basin plan amendment. So that's just an interesting kind of like very specific personal request, but recognizing that's where our basin plan may not actually work for those handful of people that actually own some land in the Eagle Lake Basin that fit between the small lot and the 20-acre lot. So. And they're very isolated. So.
Well, I don't have any feedback on that particular. No suggestions for solving that particular problem.
Just to follow up, as Lori was talking, reminded me. Yeah, those that are still on the list are from the public.
Yeah.
Those that staff have recommended that we've just determined internally that probably wouldn't be appropriate, we drop. Yeah. Now that I think about it, the ones that stay on the list are from the public. We have no reason to take them off unless, of course, you folks want them gone.
Yeah. Well, some of them I'm tired of looking at, but
understood. There's a plan.
So the other quick, I hope it's a quick question. So aside from where other programs might be able to work on some of the projects that are below the line, have any other entities offered us money to work on the ones that are below the line?
I know offhand, and I might ask if my Klasiak knows of any of the Victorville projects, that wastewater treatment operators certainly contribute data to help us evaluate appropriate site-specific objectives. Department of Fish and Wildlife has helped us at Hot Creek, not so much at Fish Springs. Are there any other that folks can think of? Yeah, Susan River Wastewater Treatment folks.
Data?
Is that data?
Data, yeah.
Now, the best example that I'm familiar with that already has occurred is the China Lake de-designation of use, where the Navy had very much of an interest in that de-designation, so they did a lot of work. I don't know of anything quite that similar for any of these other projects, other than, like I say, the wastewater treatment operators.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I did have one question for you. This is my first triennial review, so maybe you can speak to the process. Say we adopt this tonight and we move forward 6 months, a year from now, there's this high priority that comes along and we all think it's deserving of a place on the triennial review list and others may not. How does amendment of this happen, or does it ever? This is the list for the next 3 years, and then we look at it again in 2018.
Correct. Excellent question. Thank you. The list is adopted. If you adopt this list, these set out our priorities, and then these priorities become part of our work plan for individual staff. And I happen to have 11x17, I'm holding up here, a spreadsheet showing all the projects that everyone, at least of the basin planning staff, work on. And this list for the annual work plan comes straight off the basin plan priority list, indicating which projects they should work on. As we go through the time, and like I think I alluded to briefly, sometimes a project has to be postponed or cannot be worked on for various reasons, be it weather-related reasons or funding reasons or whatever. So we will then look at other projects on this list to work on instead. If something entirely new comes in that was not even considered by the board members to be worked on, this is where the communication with Patty Kuyumjin and yourselves helps us determine the priorities of what we should work on if such a change needs to be made. And we also give 6-month updates and EO reports of the progress of these training review projects, so you can track the progress to see if in fact we're working on them or not, and if not, why not.
And going back to the conversation on the Eagle Lake, that was something that a resident requested to have on there. Did that same property owner say, yes, keep that on there, I'm still interested? Have we had any communication?
No, we have not.
Does he still own the property?
I don't know the status. No, you don't know, or no, they don't. No, we do not know. This was mentioned, on the, like I said, the triennial review for 2012, requested that it be added, and we added it, but have not heard anything from this person for this current time, or since then, in fact. It's been 3 years.
We've got limited staff to allocate to these projects. I, for one, could see something like that, you know, vetted with the original requester if there's no longer need or the property's changed hands. Remove that and, at least on the list itself, reduce that workload a little bit. This is a public hearing, so I see a few members of the public from the audience. Or is there anyone that would like to speak on this item? I don't have any orange cards, but that doesn't say you can't fill it out after the fact. Anyone at all? Mr. Olds.
Come on, Logan, we know
you want to talk.
I just want to, Logan Olds, General Manager, Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority, I once again wanted to show appreciation for Rich and his collaborative process to involve us in this review. This is my, I don't know, third or fourth triennial review, I guess, at this point, and I've just always found him to be very upfront and helpful when we go through this. Also, as it relates to items that do not go on the priority list, the way I always tend to view those is if they're not important to you all, that means they're not going to show up in my permit, right? So that's kind of the general, the yin and the yang, I guess, of this process. But again, you know, no particular comments, just gratitude for the collaboration.
Do you have anything else to share?
I was going to finish off with a sort of a reminder of the resources available. The total of all of these 20 projects adds up to 15.5 PYs for basin planning staff over a three-year period. And we have 6 PYs available, so that's about 40% of the total. work on. And again, by prioritizing them like we have, we will not work, we would very likely not work on them all, and those at the bottom of the list will not receive our attention unless something changes in the next 3 years. This just gives you an idea of how much work is going to be done if we prioritize these top ones, and how much work is needed if we were to work on them all. Ending with the Mojave Desert sunset, which that particular one we didn't have driving down, but
just
we
leave
did
that
see
out
it.
So we can pretend we can look out the window.
Yeah.
Nice. Are there any last questions for staff?
Well, I have comments.
Yes. Sorry.
If we're at the deliberation point, or
yes,
we are. Okay. First of all, I'd like to say I like the direction this triennial review is going in. I feel like we're moving to being more proactive, and it's feeling more like strategic planning as opposed to a grab bag of random thoughts that people have come up with. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I love Table 4 showing all the criteria, so that's a great addition. And in general, I like the, well, I approve of the list that are all above the line. And I have an additional thought. It can go below the line. That's fine with me. But I just want to throw out this idea and get other board members' feedback on whether they like this idea. What led to this idea was learning that in Nevada, so a private company, water company, bought a ranch at Honey Lake, and I'm not clear, maybe somebody can tell me, if the ranch is in California or in, it's all in Nevada, is that what you're saying? Okay, and they're building a water pipeline from that ranch to the Tesla plant and maybe other parts of the North Truckee Meadows area. But now that I'm spending a lot of time in Las Vegas, I'm aware of how Nevada looks covetously on everybody else's water. And it occurred to me that there's a possibility that a private company could buy a ranch in California and thereby get its water rights and then export water from California to Nevada. Could that happen? I don't know. And I know that concern has been expressed about the Truckee River operating agreement taking water out of Independence Lake, and that could be harmful to our aquatic resources. That's under the control of the federal government and of Nevada, so we don't have a whole lot to say about it. So I began thinking that it might be worth doing a survey of our surface waters in our region to identify those areas similar to the Squaw Creek where we might want to identify those where beneficial uses may not be protected unless we put flow requirements on those rivers. So the Susan River might be one. I don't know if this Fish Springs Ranch thing affects the California part of the Susan River. Truckee, I don't know how much latitude we have on the Truckee at this point. West Carson, and then I'm just throwing out ideas of rivers that came to mind, but the point is really to do a region-wide survey to identify areas where we might want to consider putting flow requirements on them, particularly as population grows and as there's climate change, increasing evaporation. So then the last one, river, and Mr. Pumphrey probably knows a whole lot more about this than I do, would be the Owens River between Mono Lake and where the lower Owens River operating restoration project begins, because there are flow requirements at the lower part of the Owens River, but as I understand it, not on the rest of the Owens River.
Well, those water rights have been expropriated already, not to Nevada.
Yeah.
And there are flow requirements in certain parts in the Mono Basin. There are flow requirements associated with Mono Lake. And then when you get outside the basin, you're sort of into the Owen system in the sense that you're flowing into either the upper Owens River or Mammoth Creek, Hot Creek. So I'm not sure that would be applicable.
Okay. So given the long lead time it takes to impose flow requirements on rivers, I mean, we have years and years, we have to collect data and stuff like that. I went on the State Water Board's water rights database and put in our rivers and didn't come up with any water rights, which could definitely be operator error that I don't understand how to access data in the water rights database. But it would be, I would like to know, you know, what water rights there are on particularly since much of our region probably aren't going to have groundwater sustainability agencies. So just kind of understanding where, taking a survey to identify where the risks are and where we might want to take a look at putting flow requirements on rivers. So I'm just curious what other board members think of that idea. And my proposal is to add that as a below-the-line project.
Are there any comments?
I have a comment.
Yes.
First of all, there's a California legislation that establishes groundwater management districts.
Right.
And we have one in Truckee that the Teamput manages, which would apply to taking water out of the Mars aquifer and putting it in the river to flow to Reno, for example. I don't know how protected they can be, what they can do to stop, but it's the only defense I'm aware of, legislative defense, you know, in law, that you would have some leverage to work with. And I didn't realize you were talking about Fish Springs until you said at the very end of your comments. I know a lot about that, but we could talk about it over dinner. I worked on it.
Okay.
And it's been in place for the better part of 10 years.
Okay.
But it hasn't been active. But it's all duly licensed by the state engineer of Nevada, and supposedly is within the safe yield of the Honey Lake watershed. Supposedly.
So what do you think of the general idea of just having a survey?
Well, I think it's a good idea because otherwise things could get away from you and you wouldn't know anything about it until it was too late to act.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I think it would be good.
Okay,
any other comments or conversation?
Just a quick conversation. Anyways, we, Alpine County, did adopt the groundwater management plan about 5-6 years ago. Also, about 10 years ago, there was a proposal to export groundwater out of Alpine County. For us, we were very fortunate that the same thing happened to Sierra County. They passed a county ordinance that would not allow the export of groundwater out of their county, or at least raise the bar. Our county ordinance looks very close to what Sierra County adopted. We're very aware of all this that's going around us. There is also the federal court decree regulating the west and east fork of the Carson River. So it's the Alpine Federal Court decree. So we have some protection there, not entirely. But I refer to the Yellow Book a lot. That's it to me. But I think a survey is very beneficial.
Any other items the board wishes to recommend be included with the triennial review?
No, I think the idea of a survey is something we could look into. It might not take long to to make it, since Mono County has a groundwater exportation prohibition, Inyo County's groundwater is already exported, and so there isn't any left over to go anywhere. So it may be that the amount of available water rights is not very great, but I don't have any problem with that. If it's appropriate, I would move adoption of the resolution as proposed.
I'll second the motion.
So I need to be clear.
I would move adoption of the recommendation as proposed, with the addition of the survey requested by Dr. Horn.
Okay. And is your second including that?
Yes.
And I do have a speaker's card from Catherine Raven from LADWP. Catherine, please come forward.
Thank you very much. Catherine Rubin, for the record, from Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. And we just want to make a comment to Dr. Horn's comment about doing a flow requirements within the Owens Valley.
I'm just proposing a survey, not actually doing
flow. Right, and we're not against a survey, but we would want anything dealing with flow requirements to be publicly noticed.
Of course.
And go through a public.
Absolutely.
Right.
Of course.
Thank you for those comments. We have a first and a second. I'll turn it over to the board clerk.
While Sue's waiting, if you could help me with the language. So adding a project below the line as survey of flow requirements, what would be appropriate terminology? Establishing.
Well, here's what I wrote on my sheet of paper. A survey of surface waters to identify those we might want to consider creating flow requirements for the purposes of protecting beneficial uses.
Okay.
I can give you the sheet of paper.
If I can make a suggestion, we need to call it in-stream flows because that's how it's identified.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
That's a technical term.
So we can read. So we've just read in the record a project description to be added to the triennial review list. Would you propose where on the list that it should be added?
Below the line somewhere. I'll give you the sheet of paper. You can wordsmith it to get my.
And I'll estimate through to the PYs to work on it. Excellent. Okay.
If I could add, Rich, I will work with you, too, because the Division of Water Rights did a similar assessment a few years ago, and so that we have a baseline of a report to start with, and that we could probably use that as a starting point and then go from there, you know, in terms of updating it. So it may not be as hard as you think.
Perfect. Not a problem. Just make sure we're doing this correct tonight to add to, because this attachment will be, the project description just described will be added to the resolution, which I understand is being nominated for adoption.
Yes.
All right.
With
that, then I'm ready. It was moved by Mr. Pumphrey and seconded by Mr. Dias. Dr. Amy Warren?
As long as it has the additional thing, yes. Yes.
John Jardine?
Yes.
Eric Sandell?
Yes.
Kimberly Cox?
Yes.
Motion carries.
So it's assumed.